So this morning, we'd like to offer a further exploration of this discourse. So, as has been mentioned previously, the discourse consists of 16 steps. It's in four tetrads. It's genuinely a discourse for the meditator. And in the first tetrad, the primary area was to the body, establishing a clear, calm, relaxed relationship to the whole body and giving that real priority so that we are quite steadfastly in touch with the being of the body, close to it, respectful, sensitive, and connected. And through that we can listen well, so to speak, to the needs and the responses of the body, and taking care and giving support in a variety of ways. And this is an expression of wisdom and clarity to our physical life, so that there isn't neglect. The second section of the four tetrads deals primarily with the heart life, feeling life, and the importance, as we have mentioned over the days, of happiness and of joy, and that direct connection with the inner life. And to take the opportunity when happiness and joys come in the forms and in the formless times of the day, to feel that, to experience it, to stay quite close to it, and recognize, of course, what a nourishing and valuable experience that it is. And of course, like all the other varieties of fields of experience that we pass through, happiness arises because the causes and conditions are there for it to arise. It stays because the causes and conditions are there, and it also equally passes because the causes and conditions are there for it to pass. And that essential principle applies to everything, inwardly and outwardly. Whatever arises requires causes and conditions. Whatever stays requires causes and conditions. And whatever passes requires causes and conditions. And there is no exception to that. Anyway. And that being in tune with the rhythms and flows of life means that the exploration and feelings of happiness and joy, and when the causes and conditions for that to fade, it may be the energy may drop, it may be the concentration may fade a little bit, maybe it's just coming to a natural completion. If we are with the flow of that, then when the happiness and joy fades away, it can leave a quiet contentment, a quiet equanimity, being quietly peaceful, carrying on with the process and with our meditations. From the second tetrad, group of four, we then went to the third, and giving us a reminder as well of the value of what we can appreciate and feel glad about, and to be able to acknowledge that. One of the important aspects of this, it serves as an antidote to the tendency towards putting ourselves down. It is very, very easy to keep highlighting in our life that which we don't like about ourselves, where we feel we're not good enough, we have the view about ourselves that we're not doing enough, and place an enormous amount of unhealthy and unhelpful pressure upon ourselves. And we can keep looking at, we can keep going into the causes and conditions. We can blame our poor old parents for that, or some, or our schooling, or whatever, whatever it might be. But it doesn't make any difference in viewing in that way. So, in our practice as well, the experience of gladness, of appreciation, but also includes the capacity to look and genuinely acknowledge and recognize what is of value, what is rather lovely and precious, what we can offer and share with others, and to recognize in our inner life and in the small gestures of our life that take place, what those expressions are, so that we really can feel genuinely in ourselves to be glad to be who we are, to be glad to be in touch with ourselves, and to be glad to have in many small ways the opportunity to share and offer and be available for others as well as ourselves. And all of that is part of that tetrad. And with that, at times as well, that experiencing of the mind. To really just experience the inner life, to be acknowledged and as close to it, as we said, with regard to the body. There is in that whole process, as I mentioned to you yesterday, a freeing up which is taking place. So when we're concentrated, we're freeing ourselves up from being unconcentrated. When we're mindful, we're freeing ourselves up from being unmindful. When we're happy, we're freeing ourselves up from being unhappy. When there's a joy and a sweetness of that, there's a contentment there, and we're freeing ourselves up from being discontented. So there's a certain, we could say, development which is taking place, and that development is giving us the opportunity at different times of recognizing that it is a liberating process. It's not I have got to achieve this great enlightenment or this great liberation, and that would make it a metaphysic. It tends to put something very far out of reach. I've got to attain this, I've got to get to that. If we're really in touch with the process there, we see the freeing up is actually taking place, particularly with calm insights, with joy, with contentment, with clarity. The freeing up is actually taking place as we move through the process. And all of that is stated well and clearly in the bare outline of the discourse. Of course, having said all of that, the inner life doesn't necessarily correspond to the flow of the discourse. Oh, only if it would. It would be lovely to be able to offer you all a guarantee, okay, today you'll sit and you'll be completely calm, experiencing the whole body, concentrated and focused and very deeply contented. And then day two, you will be calm, clear with your body, very happy, lots of joy flowing through, and that will be day two. And then on day three, you will be full of gladness, experiencing your mind with lots of insight and being able to acknowledge all this freeing up that's going on. It's so wonderful, and I can't wait for the last full day. It would just be amazing if it could be like that. But it ain't, as we know. So there's a process there, but human beings being what we are, this lovely and precious experiential process keeps being interrupted, you know, and knee pains just get in the way, and the wandering mind is so distracting, And then that person sitting next to me who keeps farting is really, you know, if she or he had stopped, we'd be totally enlightened by now, but etc. And that shit, cow shit, all over the fields yesterday, it completely ruined my whole day and probably my whole life. So we constantly looking around for something which is stopping me from being the next Buddha or whatever it might be. So then we come to this last section. As I say, on the serious side here, there's Sandhya and her talk to us. The real hub of the teachings of the four truths, meaning the four things which really matter to us in life. And one are the problems, the issues of life. And what's contributing to those problems? What are the causes and conditions? What needs to be changed there? What's the resolution for that? And what's the way to resolve that? And that hub of the teaching, those core and precious principles of the teaching, I feel, as a servant of the Dharma, genuinely need to be applied everywhere. It's right across the board. And so, as you know, some of you who have listened to me previously, as well as here, that we can, and we need to, and I do, of course, address a variety of areas of life. And those areas of life will address and look into social issues and our personal issues, the issues of self and identity, the issues of relationship to what we do, and to see and to look into our institutions as well, our religious institutions and our political institutions and our social institutions, and to recognize and see what's valuable and supportive, and there is much valuable work being done, but also to also address as well what goes on in our institutions which is bringing about suffering, which is causing suffering, which is generating the conditions for suffering, and then the Dharma voice of wisdom, the Dharma voice of compassion must address that. It's not, Dharma is not a teaching here just for calmness, for a little relaxation. It's a teaching which, as I said, has as its hub. There is suffering in this world. There is the suffering of the institutions. There is the suffering of the individuals. And there are causes and conditions. And it's our task to explore that and to address that. And that exploration and addressing is really what the Dharma teachings are about there. And when we come into the last area here, the last tetrad there are four references here. And in different times over the days, of course, we and yourselves have been touching on them. And I think sometimes in the avenues of reflection, some things like the four truths of life really are worth remembering, not because of any ideological or religious reasons, but let's say there is an issue of some suffering taking place, the stress, the worries, the anxieties, the fears, the blame, the fault-finding, and so forth. And it's so easy to kind of get just stuck in the issue, in the problem, in the suffering. But if we've really got in mind, in a very clear way, we might then go to say, well, what's contributing this? What is my attitude here? What is my intention? What am I promoting? What am I defending? What am I missing out? What am I forgetting or neglecting? What do I need to be clear about? What do I need to change? So one then made the shift, and it's an incredibly important shift for our welfare. What contributes to this? As the Buddha commented in a much-loved statement, owing to that, whatever that is, this arises. So something which is present and which is challenging and difficult for us, it doesn't come out of nowhere. There is no, in the Dharma teaching, there is no God who rewards and punishes. The circumstances of life, the conditions of life, make an event happen. And it's our task to acknowledge whatever that problem, issue, big or small, global or personal, there. Then to turn the attention to the causes and conditions which contribute to it, and really work with that and to see what can be changed, with the view, it's important here, and with the intention towards the resolution of it, towards the dissolution of suffering in this world. It's the great task, it's the great responsibility. And fourthly, there is the way, the right view, clear view. There is the intention. There are our communications there. There's the livelihood and the work. And there's the mindfulness and awarenesses and the concentration and the necessary effort. And if we put all of that and really collectively work together and address that with our institutions, with our businesses, with our social networks, with our own life, and say, yes, where is the problem? What are the causes and conditions? What's the resolution? What's the way to resolve this? Give that a priority, as plenty of you do already in the various fields of work, as a sustaining principle. It will make a profound impact on this world. That's the power of the Four Truths. Yeah. So in coming into the last one, there, the initial one, while mindfully breathing in and out, one is mindful of impermanence. I know sometimes we've heard this word, impermanence, and Buddhism, so many times. There, some people hear the word and it's like a drug. They begin to feel like they've just taken a sleeping tablet. Because this word impermanence gets used so often there. But it needs an understanding, so it's not just in the rhetoric language. Literal, it is not permanent. It is not the reality of life. It's not some ultimate truth there. It is the direct experiential event which we are familiar with. And all issues of life, amongst the causes and conditions that contribute to them, will have a relationship to impermanence. And therefore, the view can arise around impermanence and around time. Something is continuing which I do not want to continue. Something is going on, staying, and I don't want it to. Stress. Unhappiness. Conflict. Something is changing, but I don't want it to change. I want it to stay like it is, whatever that may be about. Something is changing, but it is changing, but I don't like the way it is changing. Something is staying the same, but I don't like the way it is staying the same, or I like the way it is staying the same, and I want it to stay the same even longer. And in this relationship to time, in this relationship to change and non-change, our peace of mind is very much related to that. If you can think of any situation in your life where there is some stress about, it will have some connection with our relationship to change. I can't think of a situation in my life, and if you do, please let me know of a, in which the difficulty doesn't have something to do with change. It is changing. It's not changing. It's not changing in the way I like. It is changing in the way I like. So, since change, the appearance of change, does have such a significant relationship impact upon us, my goodness me, it's worth giving lots of interest in it. Because the moments of life I can't go back to, and I can't hold one single moment. I can't freeze a single moment in time. I can't say, finally, and then everything stops and becomes forever agreeable. Life is not like that. And if we think that, we are in cuckoo land. And though, you have to forgive me, but not too much. Though we might say, the power of now. I can't remember where I heard the word, but the power of now. Sometimes, from my experience, and possibly yours, the now doesn't seem to have much power at all. It certainly doesn't seem to have the power to keep my attention all the time. And sometimes the power of now seems rather powerless to keep me present. And I'm here, there, and everywhere. And then I hear the gong. Oh, yes. It's a retreat. I knew I'd come here for some reason. I completely forgot what it was all about. So much for the power of now. I think I'm going to write a new book. I've got a great title. The Powerlessness of Now. It won't sell, though. Anyway, so forgive me, all you Eckhart Tolle fans here. I love him to bits. So, I'm only teasing. But can we, in our exploration of the movement of life, the reason for the recognition of change and to be working with it is to free us up. It's not to make an ideology of everything is impermanent and that's the reality. It actually is to free up the being. It's to free up the being to a degree that we can be with the movement of life. We can be with the actuality of this unfolding, extraordinary process and really be with it. And if we are holding, we stop being with the movement. And life will not stop. One cannot freeze it. And so we have this extraordinary history of our evolution. This whole process which is going on, and you and I as a living generation of it. And it's, gosh, the amount of time that we are here on this earth is so short, and as I said in France a few months ago. The odd thing is that one's moving through this life and as much as possible being with the rhythm, being with the change, working with it, finding some clarity and love to be with it. And then just as we're getting into it, and just as we're getting with it, and just as we'll be getting to understand life, we have to start preparing to leave it. It didn't seem quite fair, you know. We, three score years and 10, so I've already gone past my sell-by date. So there is this movement which is going on, the rhythms and the flows which are going on, and as the text says here, one is seeing the fading away. So as the movement into the present comes, with all the receptivity and the clarity and the engagement which is required from us, there is the recognition of the old is the fading away of the old, to allow the receptivity for the living present. But there is also equally the fading away as well. And the Buddha uses rather a good analogy, and I remind myself of it from time to time. So sometimes there may be an issue for us, whatever it might be. And of course the natural wish would be for it to be over and done with rather quickly. It's a problem, it's a hassle, but it's not going away. So then we apply our practices there in order to allow something just to fade away. And so sometimes there's a slow but confident feeling one is moving on from the old, is having less impact, and it's fading away. And the more clarity and the quiet letting go, the more problematic issues genuinely can fade away. And the analogy which is used, sometimes at home, some people use a tablecloth. And then some of us, like moi, who not always so mindful, knock over the glass of red wine if it's on the table. So there's this lovely, nice white tablecloth, and then there is the mark of existence, this red wine. So then one knows one's got to pour a bucket load of salt over it there, and then put it under the tap and wash it away. And what I noticed, and perhaps you do, that as one does that gradually, in the course of time, the colour begins to fade away. And then may not get back to quite white, but it begins to fade away. And sometimes, when there are issues in our life, the recognition of the fading away as part of our practice is important. We've been in a relationship, and there is a breakup of the relationship, and it's some sadness and hurt and disappointment about what happened there. And one can either kind of be stuck in the past, and of course that will make it even more painful, or sometimes we've had to recognize that our life needs to move on. If we know she or he isn't coming back, they've gone. We may have changed dramatically, but they have gone. And when the other has gone, if we're not holding on to, and this rather deep voice, one of the important ones here, I need to get on with my life. And that willingness to, not easy, but to get on with one's life, it will contribute in a healthy and natural way to the fading away of the past, so that we find fresh flows with life. And sometimes, of course, as you will know, in areas of relationship, and or in other issues or difficulties as well, we have been honestly have been able to say to ourselves afterwards, though it was difficult and though it was painful, actually, it was the best thing that happened to me. Sometimes, in the ending of, though it may be painful at the time, or difficult, whatever it might be about, sometimes the inner life can experience an appreciation for the difficult. A recognition that that challenge affected one, and one can get on and, with one's life, in which there's no feeling of reaction or rejection. But one has seen change, one understands impermanence, one is moving on with life. And all of that, finally, is very much in the in part of the process of the liberation. Mindfulness of the body, calmness of the body, experiencing of the joys and the happinesses of life, recognizing gladness, really being in touch with the mind, acknowledging a freeing up process which is going on, knowing that that process easily is interrupted because of the appearance, the arising of the first major truth that impacts on human beings, and saying, okay, there is this, however, there are the causes and conditions, I have consciousness, I am human, I and others can work together to change this, and that contributes to further joy and happiness, the fading away of problems, and the real knowing of that liberated way of life is about. It's a reasonably clear process, and it's a clear process which you and I can experience for ourselves, we can know for ourselves, and that gives it a quiet power and authority. Let's have a couple of quiet minutes, shall we? all beings bring consciousness to life. May all beings live with insight. May all beings live with a liberating wisdom.